Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello, everybody. Once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMZ's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Dr. Terrence Clark is the chief of bariatric care at Ellis Medicine, is one of the three surgeons at Ellis Medicine's nationally recognized bariatric care center. Dr. Clark works with patients on surgical weight loss programs to help them effectively lose weight and keep it off. Dr. Clark earned his medical degree from Ross University School of Medicine, Portsmouth, Dominica, and completed his internship and residency at Robert Packer Hospital in Sayre, Pennsylvania, and his fellowship at New York Hospital of Queens. He's a board certified by the American Board of Surgery. Dr. Clark, as always, thank you for returning and for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Anybody wants to be part of the conversation, you know the drill. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Clark, when should somebody consider having bariatric surgery, which is, you know, either stapling or banding of the stomach?
Pretty much first evaluation really should come about when the patients have felt they've exhausted most of their traditional conventional approaches to weight loss. But the most basic criteria is someone with a body mass index of over 40. And in most people, that's going to be somewhere around 100 pounds overweight or plus or minus, depending on height. And then, or if they have a BMI, which is body mass index, greater than 35 with related medical problems such as sleep apnea, diabetes, high blood pressure.
And how do you measure BMI one more time?
There's a formula for it based on height and weight. But essentially, it's a little cookie cutter way, but it's just the most straightforward way to measure it now.
Well, what does it take to succeed with bariatric surgery? I mean, obviously, you know, you can eat all the ice cream you want, even if your stomach is stapled.
The surgery alone it's not a cure. It's only meant to be a piece of the puzzle. What's got to be changed in the patient's behaviors, dietary choices, overall education. It's a big piece of the puzzle, probably a corner piece, but it's meant to be in conjunction with lifestyle, behavior, and modifications, all of it together.
So what do you see? I mean, you do a lot of this. What do you see? What differentiates successful patients from not-so-successful patients?
I think it's really embracing the concept that what they are doing currently is wrong. And it's wrong for a number of reasons. There's some individual genetic issues and metabolic issues, but a large portion of this is involved just between dietary choices and activity levels, but processed carbohydrates, all of this is just a big piece of where we're at. And I think what's going to make people more successful is really understanding that they've got to relearn how to eat. And without embracing that.
But doc, couldn't they relearn how to eat before they had the surgery?
Oh, that's a common thing said. A couple of the different surgeries, the gastric bypass or sleeve gastrectomy, they don't work just on a restrictive element. They're affecting the metabolism of the patient. They're altering intestinal hormones, and that's driving almost seemingly an automatic weight loss. So that's going to give you a tremendous head start with the weight loss, and that's going to have an effect for a good couple of years without, even if the patient's not doing the right or the wrong thing. But ultimately, maintaining that, there's no way around it. If you've got to change lifestyles.
Do you ever say no?
Certain situations that if the patient's not a surgical candidate, whether that's based on, rarely it's medical problems because that's ultimately what we're trying to improve. Yeah. But for someone who just isn't willing to change, if they're not going to make changes to diet, and they're very open with it.
Oh, are they?
Some people will be. He's like, well, I'm not going to do that. Or I can't do that. And, well, I mean, we can help you. We're going to, you know, you're going to be seeing a dietitian or a psychologist. And ultimately, why is it that you don't want to change certain self-destructive habits?
Yeah.
But for some people it's a real small number that don't recognize that.
Well, you said two things, one of which I don't think I heard of. For
Sleeve gastrectomy?
Yeah, what is that?
So that's it's essentially converting the stomach to a narrow tube. It results in removing 85-90% of the stomach of the patient.
Is that considered more radical than regular bariatric?
No, its effects are pretty similar to the gastric bypass.
Right.
It's probably a little less technically demanding compared to the bypass or other procedures, not necessarily the band.
Yeah.
So in the spectrum, it's probably a little less complicated than the gastric bypass, but it's yielding similar results.
If you guys out there want to know about this, if you've just interested, or if you have a friend, or if you are somebody who has in fact experienced this, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Jim in Matamoros. All right, Jim, you're on.
What type of pain meds are given following the surgery, and what effect do they have on the gastric motility?
I'm so sorry. Say it again and slow, Jim. For some reason, you're breaking up today. Go ahead.
What type of pain meds are given following the surgery, and what effect do they have on gastric motility?
Well, you're talking about just perioperative pain management. They can vary from just anti-inflammatory medications to most commonly narcotic medication. Any narcotic based on an opioid medication would slow down somebody's intestinal tract temporarily. It wouldn't be a permanent issue unless someone was on those pain medicines chronically.
Well, we've heard a great deal about opioids being overprescribed. And do you ever worry about that?
Well, we do try to minimize it as much as we can, but really, we're using it under such a short period of time. Majority of pain after these surgeries, the peak of it really is under a week.
Right. 1-800-348-2551. Jim from Matamoros, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay. So there used to be two kinds of bariatric surgery, one of which, of course, was the banding. They put a band around. If you need to, they would loosen the band. If they need to, they would... but then there was also the stapling, and I take it from my earlier conversation with you that stapling comes more often than banding.
Yeah, I think just the track record of the surgery itself has lent itself to more people being interested in it. Just as I mentioned earlier, that metabolic effect of the gastric bypass does have a seemingly an automatic effect for a while, whereas the band never had that. Ability to achieve that. The results of the band were far more across the spectrum. They were definitely more individually based, and as well as even practice based, depending on if those patients were managed differently at different practices or more aggressively, because the band is an adjustable device.
Right.
Lots of people had tremendous results with it, but again, it was really patients had to understand how they were going to use it.
Now, is this minimally invasive?
All of these procedures are done minimally invasive.
So how do you do it again?
Through small incisions.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much the basic laparoscopic technology is small incisions with video cameras the instruments that are specialized to achieve that.
Wow.
So.
Okay, we'll come back and we'll talk to Kate of Woodstock, but first we're going to take a little break.
Support comes from Saratoga Hospital, committed to women's health with the Saratoga Midwifery and Women's Primary Care Practice at Exit 13 off the Northway, saratogahospital.org. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie presenting Picturing Winter with paintings by Winslow Homer, Andrew Wyeth, Grandma Moses, and more American artists. ArkellMuseum.org. North Shire Bookstore hosting Rinker Buck for his book, The Oregon Trail, Friday, December 4th, Manchester, Vermont, and Saturday, December 5th, Saratoga Springs, New York. And from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans. Hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons. GrapesandGrainsWine.com.
And we are back, and we are delighted to be here with Dr. Terrence Clark, Chief of Bariatric Care at Ellis Medicine. Okay, so we've got Kate from Woodstock, as promised, 1-800-348-2551. Kate from Woodstock, you're on.
Hi, I just wanted Dr. Clark to know that I am celebrating my second year on December 23rd of from having a gastrectomy done.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I was 300 pounds. I had high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes was off the wall, and I lost 150 pounds.
Wow.
My blood pressure is quite great. I'm back down to a 5.2 with my A1C and my diabetes. And to answer questions to other people, I researched all of these surgeries and the lap band for like 5 years before I decided to do what I wanted to do. And I went to different doctors, different areas that did it to see where the fit was in order for me to feel comfortable to do this. And every day is a struggle for me. I have to treat my condition as an addiction to food and to sweets. And that's how I deal with it. I get up every morning and I just thank God that I'm still, you know, within my weight register. And I just looked at the day and say, hey, I can't eat this. This is not, you know, something that is good for me. And that's how I do it.
And you say you lost 150 pounds?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Wow. And how much did you weigh before?
Close to 300. I was like 298 pounds.
Wow. Wow. And is there a minimum where you'd like to get to?
I think I'm pretty much where I'm going to be. I fluctuate between 150, 155 now, and I'm happy with that. I'm happy with how I am and how I look. And I'm not concerned with how I look. I'm more concerned with how I feel.
And how tall are you?
I'm only 5'2".
Wow. Okay. So, doctor, do you have any response?
Well, I mean, she's done great. And
and
I think it's like that what she's describing, that struggle, that daily effort that she has to put into it. You know, and I think that's a great point. I think a lot of people think it's just automatically going to be grass is going to be greener and all these issues are going to fade away, the stresses and everything else that's contributed, the triggers that have contributed to certain eating choices and behaviors, and those aren't going to go away. And I think taking stock of what those triggers are so that you can have a game plan for it when you get this far out from surgery is really the best way to handle it.
So, Kate, when you see a plate of ice cream, which is easy to go down as opposed to something that may be more difficult, what's your methodology?
I just, you know, tell myself that, you know, if I want to stay healthy, if I want to live longer, that, you know, I cannot eat this. This is not for me. So I will eat other things like Jell-O or, you know, fruit or whatever. Once in a while, my grandchildren will take out a candy bar, and I'll say, "Oh, just let me smell it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, let me get that chocolate smell," and I'm fine. But you have to. It's a big mind game. You know, you have to control yourself. Nobody else can do it for you.
Any unforeseen consequences? For example, I often think somebody's 300 pounds, and now 150. There's some extra skin on the body. Anything like that?
There is. Oh, yeah, there is. And I'm not happy with that. But once again, I'd have to go through surgery, and there's a lot of cosmetic work, and that's not who I am. You know, this is me. I mean, that skin, that extra skin makes me remember what I was.
And, doctor, do you work with others, plastic surgeons, others who can do that work?
Yeah, we frequently refer people once they've reached a point where that is becoming an issue. For some people, it can become a medical problem, not just a cosmetic issue. Right. And then, yeah, but there's several plastic surgeons that we refer to in order to accomplish that. Yeah, I think part of it is, oh, now they have patients have extra skin. But the reality was, no, that's skin that was there, actually, mm-hmm. before.
Yeah.
And a big problem, I think more people would probably move to having some of these body contouring procedures done if their insurance plans would cover it. Because in some, like I said, in some cases, it's not so much of a cosmetic thing as it is daily activities and ambulation. We're trying to work with various other societies, psychiatric society, because there is some serious self-image issues that can be born out of this, as well as mm-hmm. with the plastic and reconstructive societies, to see if there's a way to really engage the insurance plans differently.
And does insurance cover bariatric?
Yes. Yeah.
It does. Well, Kate, thank you so much for your wonderful call. Appreciate your sticking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent. In fact, the next person who calls is guaranteed a place at the table here. 1-800-348-2551. So the question of all of these things coming together because of the weight loss. When Kate was just on, she was describing how her diabetes gets better, her everything else. Does that work almost 100% of the time?
There's improvement 100% of the time. As far as resolution entirely, such as being off medications entirely, with gastric bypass, you're talking about over 80% of the people.
Right.
Will be off medications. And in fact, the improvements you see are pretty much while they're in the hospital. A great majority of the patients we're sending home not on the medicine, which doesn't – clearly these things are going to get improved when you're losing weight. But the fact that they are off those medications so quickly speaks to the metabolic effect of those procedures.
So if somebody's on metformin, for example, mm-hmm. the number one diabetic medicine in the country, I believe, when they wake up, they don't need it anymore?
A lot of the people, a vast majority of them. I mean, obviously there's individual issues, how long they've been diabetic. I think once you start become people that have been diabetic from, and I'm talking about type 2 diabetes, diabetic for more than 10 years plus, I mean, you don't see maybe as dramatic an improvement, but you still see improvements across the board.
All five phones are ringing right now. Okay. So we're just waiting until one of them arrives on a little yellow paper that comes up onto our window, so we could read that. So one of the things about your doing this is that you are in touch with other people, because in other words, it may take a psychologist, a social worker, a psychiatrist. It may take somebody who is going to remove the skin. It may take one of those people. So
and their primary physicians are involved as well from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to take a chance. Okay, John from Troy. All right, John from Troy, you're on.
Hi. When I go to my primary physician and I talk to him about bariatric surgery, he says to me, you know, to qualify, you're going to have to lose 10% of your weight. And if you can lose 10%, you can lose 20%. If you can lose 20%, you can lose 30%. He's basically telling me that I shouldn't do bariatric. I just need to buckle down. And I'm wondering how you would respond to that.
Well, I mean, obviously you can't lose 20 pounds before losing 10 pounds. But the old adages of, you know, the whole straighten up and fly right when it comes to eating habits, somewhat lost. I mean, if you look at the statistics, they're pretty sad in the sense that people who have even lost over 100 pounds on various programs, unfortunately, 90%+ of them will regain the weight plus more in under 2 years. The results with bariatric surgery are tremendously improved over that, but it just seems like it's a common thing that you'd say, oh, just if you did this, you're going to lose the weight. But that would, it's so much more complex as far as the amount of factors that are involved with why someone is performing certain behaviors or just how their body itself responds to certain foods. Not everyone has the same response to the same carbohydrates. So I don't the criteria to lose 10% is it's a twofold issue. It's not a test to see if you can lose weight. It's more of a educational tool so that you're going to learn more appropriate ways to eat even after the surgery, and it also is meant to diminish risks associated with having surgery.
But I do understand what John is saying. The primary is saying to him, "Hey, look, if you need, you got to lose 10%. Do you make your people lose 10%?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay, and that you got to lose 10%. If you can lose 10%, then you can lose 20%. That's what he's telling you. There's a certain logic there, isn't there?
You can't just throw that out the window. But that's, I think, very superficial way of looking at it. I think a lot of programs, I know of other bariatric programs where they do the same thing. They want people to lose weight, but no guidance is given to them. Then they're sent out, and they don't come back because they're not really being given the education that's required. But there is a metabolic effect that eating and exercising isn't going to improve that. Without surgery.
Yeah, but what about the 10%? In other words, if they lost that 10%, whatever they're doing to lose it, I think John's question is, and the primary's question is an interesting one. Why not? Just stay on that program. I do Weight Watchers, and I find it very happy. And
right. I mean,
lose a lot of weight.
I guess you wouldn't question it, except that its failure rate is astounding.
I see your point.
I mean,
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and I do agree with that. I in the past, I've lost over 100 pounds and gained that plus some back. So,
Okay, John, thank you very much for the good call and a good question. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll go to Wendy in Boston Spa. Okay, Wendy, go.
Hi. I had my Roux-en-Y with Dr. Clark in 2009. I would tell you it's probably the best thing I've ever done for my health ever. Had a long laundry list of health issues before I went in, and almost every one of them has resolved. However, today, just today, in fact, I can't believe the show's on now, I went to the doctor for a thyroid issue, and I may have to have thyroid surgery, and one of the things that they mentioned to me was that because I've had the bypass, it may affect their ability to regulate my calcium if I have to have the thyroid out. I was just wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
It's not necessarily specific to the thyroid itself, but with depending on why they're removing the thyroid. But calcium, especially after a gastric bypass, a lot of the calcium is absorbed in the very beginning portions of the small intestine, the duodenum, same as well as iron. In fact, the two compete with themselves for absorption. So generally, we tell people not to take them at the same time, and that's one of the reasons why calcium tends to be one of those other supplemental minerals as well as the vitamins that we're having people take. So it's not that they won't be able to regulate it, but you're right. It might not be the same kind of management they're accustomed to.
But you should be able
to absorb calcium still.
Okay. Well, I've had really, really great luck, and I'm pretty faithful with my bariatric vitamins. So I'm hoping that that's going to make sure everything goes okay.
How much did you lose?
I lost 100 pounds initially. I'm about 5'3.5", and I was about 265 or so. I've gained some back. It's been 6 years, and the reality is that after a while, you slip back into some of those habits that you may not want to have slipped back into. So I've gained probably 25 pounds back, I would say.
And how, I know I'm not supposed to ask this, but I'm going to ask anyway, because we don't know your name.
How old am I?
Yeah, how old are you?
I'm 58 right now. Uh-huh. So I was 52 when I had it done. And
doctor, what's the oldest person you ever operated on, you know?
I'd say within our group, I'd say 80.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the old thought of, well, you're too old to get a particular surgery. There's plenty of 70-year-olds that are physiologically a lot younger than some of the 50-year-olds we've operated on. So it's really done as an individual basis.
Wendy, thanks for telling us your story. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
And we'll go to Jim in Adams. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call, doctors. Okay, yes, my wife had adult onset diabetes for several years, many years, a few years anyways, and she was on metformin medication.
and through a program of very much, you know, improved nutrition and diet, even more than she had before, and exercise, she's now off the medication without bariatric surgery or any other interventions.
That's great.
It can be done.
Oh, no, absolutely can be. I think the first line of defense, especially when someone has diabetes, and I think a lot of things we treat in the country is very reactive, especially the treatment of diabetes. And I think a lot of times people are just added on or increased their diabetic medication instead of doing the appropriate dietary measures that are really going to have a strong impact. It's not going to necessarily cure diabetes, but definitely make things a lot more controllable. For a lot of other patients, when you start getting to a metabolic problem like diabetes, it's one of those few things that I'd say we shouldn't be waiting until we've exhausted all other measures.
Yeah. Right. Our diabetic friends used to die very early, 35, 40 years old. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you'd see that was more common with type 1.
Yes, but, it was.
But type 2 patients, they live longer, but they have... the sequela associated with the disease gets incredibly
worse.
What
does that mean, sequela?
Just the consequences of chronic diabetes will lead to, vascular disease and such.
Yeah. Hey, Jim from Adams, thank you very much for the great call. Appreciate it. Yep, bye. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You want to get in on it, this is the time to do it. Questions you always had about this. There'll be some people who are sitting out there and saying, you know, maybe my husband, my wife, my child should consider this. This is a good time to ask the questions. We got the expert here. Let's go to Ben in Highland. Okay, go, Ben.
Oh, hey, how you doing, Doc? I was wondering about Ideal Protein. It's supposed to be a weight loss system or something, and how well does it work?
Well, I mean, I think whenever you start talking about any of I don't know about that specific program, but anything that's going to concentrate on purely protein, I mean, what you're looking at is you're eliminating the processed carbohydrates.
Well, Atkins was a good example.
Is a good example. Yeah. Sometimes it was taken out of, I think, context of what it really was meant to accomplish. But I think the bottom line is any of these programs that do involve limiting or eliminating processed carbohydrates, that's what they're going to accomplish. The question becomes, of course, if somebody gets back on the carbohydrates, there's an incredible rebound weight gain, which is tough to explain.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
So those of us who have cut out bread, for example, and then we eat a sandwich, boom.
It's an incredible, whatever that chemical reaction is, and they're still doing research on it. But so I don't know that specific one, but I think it's still on the basis of limiting carbohydrates.
Well, would it be dangerous, if that's the question?
Oh, there is such a thing as too much protein, absolutely. I mean, you're looking, you know, on average, they'll say somewhere between 60 to 70 some odd grams of protein a day. For an average adult, I think if you're going to be doing any of those programs, it's probably good to speak with your primary physician or a dietitian, just so that you're not going to have issues with your kidneys, or unless you already have kidney issues specifically, especially with that extra protein.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Ben from Highland. Okay, we got a couple of calls here. We'll go really quickly. I'll tell you what. We got a couple of people on the phone, but what we're going to do is take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Nine Pin Cider, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Saturday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary, consider the apple, ninepincider.com. The Urological Institute, offering urologic oncology services with prostate specialists using active monitoring protocols designed to help avoid or postpone cancer treatments through imaging and genomic testing. Urologyoncology.com. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Dine-in, takeout, delivery. 518-432-0358. Autobahn Service, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering service, repair, and diagnosis of Asian-made and imports, specializing in late-model Volkswagen, Subaru, Audi, and BMW, AutobahnTechnic.com. And from Ellis Medicine, providing options, support, and help for surgical weight loss at the Ellis Bariatric Care Center in Schenectady, ellismedicine.org.
And we are back with Dr. Terrence Clark, Chief of Bariatric Care at Ellis Medicine. Let us go to Jeff in Colony. Jeff, you're on. Hello, Jeff.
Hi.
Okay, go ahead.
My daughter's 21 and obviously would benefit from some of these techniques that the doctor has described. Is there a lower limit of age? You just talked about the upper limit of what you can consider for surgery. Is there a lower limit, and what alternatives would exist for her at age 21?
So typically, at least at our center, we don't provide these services to anyone under the age of 18. When you start getting to that age group, it involves different psychological techniques and follow-up. But for over age 18, that's pretty much, it would be the same recommendations from that point on.
So what would be the downside under 18, and why would somebody who was 21 not have faced those same downsides?
Well, I mean, I think certainly when they're being evaluated, and as I mentioned earlier, I mean, everyone is going to be evaluated by, at the very least, a psychologist.
Yeah.
I mean, if they had concerns, then we would go that route. But when you start getting definitely younger than 18, just as far as maturity, not to mention that some of these children might not even, or adolescents might not be fully grown, I think there's a number of medical issues as well as psychological issues, and not to mention involvement of the parents themselves, that definitely you need a lot more pieces in place at a program.
Jeff, you want to follow up?
I mean, she's a very mature 21-year-old senior in college, struggled with weight, and I guess I'm just and certainly the comments you made previously about dealing with the follow-up and developing good habits to replace the bad habits, those all ring true with me because she's really struggled with that. So I guess we're just wondering if there's an avenue here for somebody that would be that description.
And have you tried the other techniques, Jeff?
Mostly just diet and exercise. And it works for a little bit, and then it doesn't work. Like the doctor said, you have to undo a lot of the habits, and there probably would need to be more follow-up.
Yeah. I've had friends who have had the surgery and who also have to watch themselves at every moment.
Right. No, I mean, the surgery, it's not designed to just automatically get people to ideal body weight. But for a lot of the patients we're talking about here, I mean, this is going to be the first step towards achieving those goals. And whether that's from limiting serving sizes or to that metabolic effect of the surgery. But as far as your daughter is concerned, I would say that, I mean, if she meets the criteria and she feels that she's really exhausted the conventional programs, whether, or seen a dietitian or all of those other items, and I would say that it's probably a reasonable thing to explore.
On the other hand, I wonder why we've had a couple of calls from people who are 5'3", and who get themselves down, lose 100 pounds, but then they stop. 5'3". I mean, I'm 134 pounds, and that's where I'm comfortable. What makes somebody stop when they could go all the way at 5'3"? I'm not 5'3", but close.
I think there's a couple of different thoughts to that, and one is, a lot of these programs fail before you even start because the whole view of it is meant to be on a temporary basis. I'm going to do that until I achieve this.
Yeah.
And then once that is achieved, then it's the sliding back to this, unfortunately, the same kind of activities that led to that problem in the first place.
Right.
The other factor is sometimes maybe people don't get to the full effect. Maybe they lose 20 pounds and then they stall. The body's natural plateaus that it has when it's losing weight.
Sure.
And when they hit that, they're doing everything right, but they're not seeing results. We are an instant gratification society, and if I'm doing something now, I want to see its effects now. And that whole thing of waiting, having to wait for that plateau to break, becomes a very frustrating point
for
people.
Oh, I see. So there are natural plateaus?
Absolutely. Even after the surgery. The surgery doesn't give you an option to change and not wait the plateau out.
So if you're 5'3" and you stop, you've lost 100 pounds and you stop at 165, that might be a plateau.
There's going to be many plateaus even before getting to 160.
Interesting. Yeah. Hey, Jeff, thanks very much. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. So we have Henry in Clifton Park. Oh, 1-800-348-2551. Henry, you're on. Henry. I think Henry is breaking the rule. Here's the problem, folks. I just want everybody to know it. If you are listening for your turn, because there's an 8-second or so delay on the radio, and you're listening to the radio, you have to stay on the phone, not go listen on the radio. I'll try it one more time. Henry from Clifton Park, are you there? Apparently not. Okay, Henry, we'll skip by you, and we'll go to Philip in Montgomery. Okay, Philip.
Hi. I don't know if you want to talk about this, but I heard the story about the discovery of insulin and a historical thing, like when the first, I don't know who it was, but he discovered it. And he went to wards of comatose children that had been there for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And he started injecting the children, and they sort of woke up. And it was like a miracle. Do you know who that was and when that was, or who the discoverer of insulin was?
I'm trying to remember his name. You'll have to excuse me. But he was a surgeon, oddly enough. And I believe he was inspired by his own wife passing away, if I'm correct. And actually didn't even get a patent for the insulin. He gave it free to society. No patent for it. But I can't remember his name.
Interesting that there are some people who do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Philip, I hope that satisfies you. Bye. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Do many of the patients who come to see you, doctor, show fear at the procedure?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a natural tendency for people to be afraid of any surgery in general, but also even anesthesia, which has been pretty time-tested at this point. But I think people, they're nervous about getting the surgery. They're nervous about what's going to happen after the surgery. I think it's just the overall idea that their whole life is going to change or needs to be changed is definitely, it's concerning for some of the patients.
Now, you're not a psychiatrist and you're not a psychologist. However,
I play one in the office.
Well,
sometimes.
You have to.
Yes.
You have to. And so one of my questions has always been why people get fat and stay fat. Or obese is a better word. Do they do it to protect themselves? I knew a woman once who was married to a guy I considered not to be the nicest man in the whole world. And she got real, real obese. Then the guy died and she got thin. So
no, there's definitely
so
some,
one wonders if there isn't some cause and effect here.
There's definitely some coping mechanisms involved here. It's a multifactorial problem, but for some, it's exactly that stress management. You know, the same reason why someone's smoking or someone's other thing else to manage stress, or social pressures, or just that's how you're raised. Some people are raised to finish their
plate. So there
are
a lot, what you're saying is there are a lot of reasons.
Absolutely.
Not only to keep your husband away.
I wish we could narrow it down. I'll be honest with you.
Okay, we'll go to. I guess it's Glenda in Catskill. Are you there?
Yes, it's Glenda.
Oh, Glenda. Okay. Our wonderful volunteer just left the N out. Thanks very much.
Anyway, thank you for this program. This was wonderful, and. I just wanted to make a suggestion from experience I had. I guess I know people who have done the surgery and they've had a great result and other people who haven't had a good result. But I guess I was concerned about the young girl who was 21. And I just wanted to share an experience I had. I started going to what's called Food Addicts Anonymous. And there were people there who were also like 300, 400 pounds who had were normal weights. And it's a 12-step program, I know, but it really, if somebody embraces it, it can really work and, you know, can avoid the surgery. I think the surgery is wonderful for some people, but I don't think it's good for everybody. I'm concerned about a 21-year-old having that kind of surgery with their whole life before them without, you know, at least trying something like that to see if it works for them.
That was the reason I was calling.
Because I don't know if people know about this. It's called Food Addicts Anonymous.
There's several variations of programs like that. There's that one. There's Overeaters Anonymous. And you know, there's definitely a number of programs, and I don't think this is the kind of procedure that people just leap into. I'd say most of the people that we see in the office, even before we get to surgery, just for the first evaluation, they've really just been kind of thinking about it for probably on average 2 years before they actually make that leap. And even after that, I mean, between the psychologists, we also have there's also support groups involved before and after. I mean, you could recognize not everybody has the same support, from family or friends as others. And there's probably a correlation between the people who have the most success and who have the most support. I don't think for a 21-year-old, I think you have some good points. And, you know, we're not looking for this to be just finding anyone the moment they become obese and we're, you know, getting them to surgery. I think we're looking at it as for people that are definitely finding themselves stuck. And I think instead of waiting what could end up being 20 plus years in that situation and then accruing more medical problems and then being at higher risk at that point.
I agree with you.
The one thing I'd say, the most common thing you'll hear somebody say who's had surgery years after the surgery would say they wish they had done it sooner. And the average age of the person getting bariatric surgery in the country is in pretty much mid to late 40s.
Interesting.
Right.
Well, Glenda, thank you very much for your very good call. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we'll go to Tom in Northampton. Okay. Tom, you're on.
So, the problem with bariatric surgery, as far as I can see, it changes how much you eat, not what you eat. And people who are overweight usually have a problem with what they eat. Personally, I lost 110 pounds, and I only did it from changing what I ate and how much I exercised. And it was a very difficult process to change your habits. You just have to give up on food as being a source of pleasure.
Well, you know, I mean, that's a pretty interesting generalization from where I'm sitting, because certainly there are people who go and have bariatric surgery and realize they have to make a commitment to what they eat.
Yeah, I mean, and congratulations on what you've been able to accomplish. And I think that you'd be right to some extent that it's not just about living to eat, right? Eating to live is one of those other quotes you'll hear being said. And it is about making those changes and understanding what's going on. In a perfect world, I would find I'd be trained to do other general surgery, as opposed to bariatric surgery. But I think not everyone is as fortunate as you've been with the changes, with whether it's being able to stick to it. Or the reasons as to why they've been choosing some of those habits.
So, do you talk to the enablers? I mean, you know, I have realized on my Weight Watchers program that a small can of green peas is one point nothing. So even if we had two, it would be nothing. But sometimes I come home and my wonderful, great wife will have something really good there for me, and. Is she an enabler?
Actually, I might not go that far, but you are right that during this whole process, any patients that come by, we want family members to be involved because there is that thought of this is the easy way out. I think a lot of people think that, which it couldn't be further from the truth that this is the easy way out.
One thing you have to realize is that if you have a weight gain problem, you know, some people can eat anything and some people and get away with it, and other people they have one day and it'll take them a month to lose the
right. So are you in?
I'm in. If I am bad for one day, it'll take me a month to lose it.
Me too, Tom.
And one thing I had to realize was that I have to eat differently from the rest of my family.
Right.
And that's one of the sacrifices, that if, you know, people are eating food that have a high calorie to nutrient level, you can't eat it.
Okay.
No mashed potatoes.
Tom, exactly. And who would want them anyway? Tom, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Okay.
Right.
Good luck.
1-800-348-2551. Marianne in Glens Falls. Okay, Marianne.
Hi, just a real quick question. Would you ever do the surgery for someone who was diabetic and not grossly overweight?
Well, personally, I wouldn't, only because right now it's not a that's not a National Institute of Health recommended thing to do at the moment. They are doing those surgeries in other countries, specifically India, for people that are normal BMI, normal weight, but with diabetes.
And the diabetes,
and they are getting results with it.
They're getting results.
Yes.
And do we know why they're getting results?
It's that metabolic effect that of the surgery. And they don't get they don't become underweight because they've had the surgery either.
Well, now you say the metabolic effect. Can you help us with that?
So that's the effect on intestinal hormones. Things like ghrelin or GLP-1 or leptin. These are the more common, or the ones they're doing the most research on right now.
Right.
But the surgery's altering the concentrations and the feedback of those medication, of those hormones.
Well, that's very exciting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It does open up the ability to treat more people with diabetes. But right now in this country, that's still an investigational project.
Marianne, anything else on that?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
And thank you. Okay.
Okay.
And now we'll have a surprise. We'll go to, we're going to go to... Number two, who are you? Number two, okay, you are Edward from Springfield. No, you're not. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'm not hearing them, and so that's that. I went to number two. I don't know what that is. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, are you on number two? Edward? Edward's not there. Okay, very good. 1-800-348-2551. We have we're just about out of time. So, doctor, do you meet with? Is there a national association of you guys?
Yes, there's. We have a national. It's the American Society of Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery.
Right.
I'm saying it backwards. American Society of Bariatric and Metabolic Surgery.
Do you learn from each other?
Oh, absolutely. And we also have. Even on a more local level, we have a state chapter of that same organization, which I'm happy to say I'm the current president for.
Wow.
For New York State.
The head man.
Yeah, well, they've got me for a few more months.
Well, that's very impressive. So I guess the question now is, somebody is sitting at home listening to this program and is, you know, overweight and has to make this decision. And we know there are people who do it and fail. And we know there are people who do it and, you know, as they say, it's the best decision they ever made, you know, in their whole lives. So you, as the guy with the knife or whatever, I have to decide, because you sort of alluded to that before, whether or not, because it's what you do that it's good for people, or do you ever sort of step back and say, you know, I have to be more balanced, or I have to be balanced in this, and say, you better know what you're doing if you decide to do this.
So, yeah, I mean, that's exactly. We pretty much lay it out on the line that this isn't going to be, it might come across as a seemingly automatic fix, but this is all part of a full multidisciplinary approach for people that aren't willing to make those changes. I've had just one not that long ago. That said, he was not giving up the soda, but he wanted a surgery date. He did not get a surgery date.
Then that's very funny.
Right.
We're about out of time. Thank you, everybody who called in. It was a wonderful program. Apologize to the two people, Marie and Edward, who were left on the line. Underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, proudly introducing the gastroenterologist specialist of Litauer, in quotes, working to provide patients with comfort during colonoscopy procedures, nlh.org. Thanks again for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your call calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall, who you'll be hearing on the news any moment now. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned for a news update.